Hey everybody, I'm Gareth. Welcome back to Somewhere on Earth. It's Tuesday, the 14th of November, 2023. As we record this, we're in London and we have guests from Sierra Leone and Italy. And with us today for some friendship and company is investigative technology journalist Peter Guest. I'm just very grateful for your company, Peter. This is lovely. So what have you been working on in your realm of investigative technology journalism?
Well, it's mid-November, isn't it? So Christmas comes earlier every year, but that also means Black Friday comes earlier every year. So what I've been looking at with a few colleagues is the new e-commerce apps that you'll see a lot on adverts on social media, on the sides of buses, those kind of big platforms like Shein or Temu or TikTok Shop, which offer you those too good to be do true deals on electronics or fashion or sports gear and so on. And I guess what we're trying to figure out is asking the question, how is it they can sell you a smartwatch for less than 20 quid?
I've been asking, how is it they can sell me a smartwatch for 20 quid, or the equivalent of $30 if we're talking internationally there, Peter. Yeah, and I do wonder. And okay, are you getting any answers then? Is there any subterfuge going on in that? Or do they just take the hit at this time of year and then they recoup it at other times?
I mean, the answer is always the boring words, supply chains. I mean, what it means looking at is this huge industry of manufacturers in China who are trying to squeeze the absolute most they can out of, you know, ultra tight production lines and figuring out exactly the keywords that will sell you things. But then the really honest answer is the companies are spending a ton of money. They're spending money on advertising. They're spending money on selling you this stuff. And then you have to really be willing to lose money on each purchase in the hope that you'll go back in the future and pay more next time.
Mm. All right. That's an insight. I bet you've managed to pick up a few good deals during that research into that article as well.
But that'll be your Christmas present.
Thanks. Looking forward to it already. The hint obviously worked there. Brilliant. Peter, thanks for that. Let's get going. Let's get into the podcast. And here's what's coming up on this week's Bumper Bargain Basement Show. But we're not cheap in any way, I promise you. All right, now today we're looking at just a single issue, but it's a massive one. An ambitious international project to connect all schools to the internet by 2030, which is great. Until you think about what that actually means. Like, before you even connect these schools, you need to know where they are, as if there's some kind of convenient international register that gives you the location, the contact details, the name of the head teacher and everything relating to each of these schools. So what are you going to do? Look at their website? But then the whole problem is that the schools are offline in the first place. And then what about the connectivity itself? Mobile internet, satellite, fiber, and then who pays for it? What if it breaks? What about training the teachers? What about online safety for the kids? Yes, you need to be made of strong stuff to even think up this bold plan, let alone be implementing it. It's just as well then that we're joined by three people who are doing just that. Welcome to the Somewhere on Earth podcast. Right, so this big international project is called GIGA, and its co-founder and co-lead is Chris Fabian, who joins me now. Chris Fabian, good to have you on Somewhere on Earth. So just give us the elevator pitch here. What is GIGA?
Well, Gary, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here and talking about such an important issue as connecting every young person in the world to information and choice. GIGA is a project that we started about 4 years ago that aims to connect every school in the world to the internet. And really what that means is making sure that every community and every young person is connected to all of the things that we maybe take for granted in our day-to-day lives. The ability to look for a university to go to have skills that allow them to be employed, to provide for their family, and to have options in life that really give them that sense of dignity and opportunity that comes so easily when you're connected. But if you think about when you check in at a hotel and the first thing you ask is like, what's the Wi-Fi code? You can immediately imagine how fast that sense of freedom disappears when you're not connected at all.
Right. So it's to get all schools, and so we mean globally, all schools in the world online by 2030.
When GIGA started, it was a very simple statement. We said we were going to get every school in the world online, all schools. But then we realized nobody knew how many schools there were in the world. And that made it a bit harder. So we started off by mapping schools because you have to figure out how many there are and where they are. And we think there's something between 5 and 7 million. We've mapped about 2.5 million schools now, Gareth, and we still aren't sure, but it's going to be something in that range that we have to connect.
So we're getting an idea of the scale of the project, and that whole mapping issue, that's a whole story in itself, which we will get to because I'm fascinated by that. Just a few quick name checks before we move on to our next guest. So this involves UNICEF and the International Telecommunication Union, the ITU. Are they the main bodies driving this?
That's correct. I mean, these are the two UN agencies that started the project, and now we work with partners around the world, including now 30 governments, to drive this work forward.
All right. Now, speaking of governments, I am very glad to say we have a government minister in our midst. With us from Freetown in Sierra Leone is Salima Monoma Ba, who's Minister of ICT with the government of Sierra Leone. Welcome along to Somewhere on Earth. And looking at Sierra Leone's stats, Minister, there's quite a way to go, isn't it? You have 205 connected schools. There are 10,995 unconnected schools to go, certainly based on the data that I've looked up on the GIGA website. It just goes to show what a massive project this is.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gareth, for hosting and having us, and obviously Somewhere on Earth for having me. And I think you rightly said, you know, we understanding where we are and where we're trying to get to, we understand the scale of the task we have ahead of us. But I think that's why when Chris mentioned mapping was such a vital thing for us in order to understand where the schools are and also kind of understand what the connectivity status of those are. So I think since the start, I think it's been we've been on this journey now for the past 4 years or so. So, and I think we've been making significant headways.
Right. And to get an idea of the connectivity we're talking about here, then, I know there's a big rollout plan, at least, in Sierra Leone for fiber. But initially with the schools, are we talking more like mobile connectivity just to start with?
Yeah. So I think that those are one of the most interesting things we found out because when an initial school, so the initial data we got was the initial part of the initial school survey that we did. And some schools ticked when they said connectivity, they ticked, yes, we are connected. But then when it got to the point of, okay, wanted to understand what they meant, which is what your question is, we realized maybe what our interpretation of connectivity was different to what they were saying. I think in some schools or two or three, which we had to validate that data to even say 205 were connected, we found out that some of it was literally a small mobile connection that maybe one or two or three people were using, trying to say that was connected. But we know for what Giga is trying to do, that wouldn't suffice. So that was why mapping was such an important start of the process for us.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AI is changing the game of business. Will you be on the winning team? I'm Jordan Wilson, the host of the Everyday AI podcast and your coach to help you learn the X's and O's of AI. Artificial intelligence isn't just a new player in the game, it's a new sport altogether. So if you don't quickly put AI into play, your competitors will run up the score. I've spent my whole life building winning teams, from coaching basketball to working with big players like Nike and Jordan Brand. My next move? Helping you win with Everyday AI. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or on everydayaipodcast.com. Let's tap into AI together and put points on the board.
Right, yeah, we just need to work out where these schools are. All right, now we're also joined by Ben Roberts, who's Group Chief Technology and Innovation Officer at Liquid Intelligent Technologies. So very much the person getting this done person in the room, just in terms of the technical connectivity. And I think we've already got into an interesting point there with Salima, which is how you, what constitutes connectivity? So with you must have a technical spec that says what benchmark you're looking for. So would you say 3G connectivity into a school, does that make a school connected or does it need to have full on fiber? What are you trying to achieve here?
To have proper connectivity in a school that's really usable in education, we see it that you have, you know, some kind of Wi-Fi coverage across the school campus, right? So that will be, you know, some Wi-Fi hotspots in one or more classrooms. So, you know, typically a primary school in Africa where I'm working is is going to be having, you know, 6 or 7 buildings over 3 or 4 acres. So you're going to have some kind of network, you know, connecting those particular hotspots to a central point where you're going to have to, you know, probably install some equipment, batteries, backup power that you might not have reliable electricity. So this is, you know, part of what you need to do. And then from that point, you know, then you'll have what we call a wide area network, a link to broadband. Now that can be different types. It can be connected directly to a fiber. It can be connected via some kind of radio link, you know, from a tower, a fiber connects to a tower, there's a radio link to the school. Or for the most remote locations, it can be a satellite link. So we're seeing a lot of innovation. Satellite's been around in Africa for a long time, but we're seeing a lot of innovation at the moment, giving more bandwidth than used to be available on satellite. So yes, mobile connectivity is useful, and that will mean a teacher can get a mobile phone, you know, working in a classroom, but that doesn't really serve the children, right?
If you've got 100, it's kind of better than nothing, you mean?
Yeah, if you've got 100 tablets, then you can't connect 100 tablets to a teacher's mobile phone. So you need to have something a bit more robust to be able to allow, you know, kids to access, you know.
So, right, so we're talking about a massive technical challenge here, obviously. I know I keep saying massive all the time, and we're going to try and stop doing that, but I just can't help it when I think about the scope of this project. Even that whole challenge of knowing where the schools are is a task in itself. But Peter guest in the studio here in London to stop me using the M word every 2 sentences. What about to you? How does this sound so far from what you're hearing? You've heard there from Ben about the challenge almost of specifying the connectivity that we need. And that's before we even get the average school up and running with great connectivity and great learning for the kids.
I mean, the word I have in my mind is massive.
Not just me then, right.
But I think also you have to look at it at the kind of small scale though, right? I mean, I remember around 10 years ago, going out deep into the Amazon and seeing a school where the teacher was one guy teaching from a wooden lean-to, one textbook and a radio that he could use once or twice a week to connect to the nearest town, which is a day away on a boat. And if you were lucky, you could get 3G there. And the idea that you could access that vast resource online just seemed so utterly remote then. So it clearly is incredibly exciting and kind of massive.
There's that word again. We'll do word bingo with the word massive. Salima, let's come back to you then and just get an idea of how you're mapping out where these schools are, because in many ways I'm quite impressed that we even have this statistic. 205 schools connected so far, 10,995 to go in Sierra Leone. Is that just based on the schools we know about, or do you have pretty accurate figures there simply in terms of the number of schools there are?
Sure. And I think with us and the mapping is, I think that's one of the first things we actually did in collaboration with the UNICEF, even before we started the GIGA initiative full scale. I think because as a government, it was important for us separately to kind of just understand where all our schools are. So that location and actually geotagging them was important for us as well. So in terms of getting that accurate data, that's something we did, I think, 5 years ago. And then we have a system in terms of how we keep on updating that information as new schools, because there's one thing of mapping existing schools, but we recognize that new schools get established all the time. So you don't want your data to be redundant. So we have a system where annually we do an annual school survey and we geotag each new school as and when they're established. So make sure that our data is always up to date. But then, so pretty much accurate, and it's been pretty vital for us, especially at this point now that we're in, and actually we're moving now along in terms of actually connecting more schools and you know, being able to assess what that means has been absolutely vital for us.
Yeah, sure. So, Chris, let's just talk briefly about that mapping. There's so much to get into here, but that is an interesting story. It brings together, for instance, machine learning with satellite images to go ahead and locate schools. So just talk us through a little bit more about this. It's an open source mapping initiative, a project in its own sense called Project Connect. Tell me a bit more about that.
That's exactly it. So, Gareth, if listeners go to projectconnect.world, they can see the maps that we're talking about in real time. They can go explore Sierra Leone or Brazil And interestingly, Giga started in the Amazon region in Brazil. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we wanted to start creating a map of the schools in the Amazon region. Many of them are disconnected, but a few have been connected by satellites. And when we began this project, we realized that, again, as I said, nobody really knows where all the schools are in the world or even how many there are. We've built our own open source machine learning that works off of high resolution satellite imagery. So we're talking 20, 30 centimeter, 90% cloudless. And we can now identify a school with about 99% accuracy after we do a little bit of training in a country, because schools in different countries look sort of different. And we can do that at national scale. So this means that a Ministry of Education will often give us a CSV file or an Excel file, and they'll say, this is where all our schools are. And we'll run that against our machine learning, and we'll find sometimes a huge disparity between what is being told to us and what actually exists. In Colombia, for example, we mapped the schools. We found 5,000 schools out of 40,000, so more than 10% of the schools, that didn't exist at the national registrar. So the school existed. Somebody knew it was there. But it was only after we were able to do the machine learning extraction from the satellite imagery that we were able to say exactly where they were. And that's why you have these huge budget disparities sometime between a regional and a national government. So this kind of work is really, really important as a basis for any kind of financing, any kind of procurement that we do at a national level. And it just hasn't been done before for this type of building.
Right. So Peter Guest here in London, that's unprecedented what we're hearing there, just this effort to map schools, often based on satellite imagery and some machine learning that gets very good at, I guess, knowing the difference between a playground and a car park or whatever the model needs to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating application of these technologies that we're hearing so much about elsewhere. I mean, I guess my question would be, what is a school? I'm thinking of the context in which a lot of these educational establishments will be. Some of them will be village schools, some of them will be formal schools. How do you know what is a school?
Which is a key question, isn't it? Minister Salima Monulma Bar, Minister of ICT of the government of Sierra Leone. You're talking to us, by the way, from your office, which I assume is in downtown Freetown. So we may hear some traffic noise and the odd siren here or there, which adds just to the sense of location. It's great. But that whole point then, what to you is a school?
Yeah. I think for the government, in terms of what qualifies as a recognized education center, a hub, we have two sets. We have government and private institutions, but both equally have to be registered and have education's license to come under the formal sector. But we also recognize that in the regional areas, there might be facilities that are set up that are not necessarily don't come under the formal sector. But then I think in terms of a large scale, we kind of see how we have an oversight over some of them as well.
All right. So, Ben, let's just say we get to the point now where you're looking at that map and increasingly it's got all the pinpricks that say these are all the schools. There's your shopping list. This is what your work looks like. Now you have to connect them. So how does that happen?
Well, first we do a bit of analysis from the map. So we've been working around mapping. We're working with UNICEF on the mapping side, but then we've got some clever people who, know exactly where our networks are, where our fiber is, where the towers that we connect are. So we kind of do analysis to see how far schools are from the fiber, how far they are from a communications tower. And then we work out, what's going to be the best way to connect them. So, when we're doing projects at scale, we'll get a long list from the government, from UNICEF or whoever's organizing the project. And we see, okay, we sort them out. And then we kind of work out the costing. But often you'll find then when you start doing surveys, it might be a bit more complicated than it first seems. All sorts of challenges can come up. But that's the method we use. So it's a case of optimizing the cost, really. A basic formula, if it's less than a kilometer from a fiber, we'll connect it directly to a fiber. If it's up to 20 kilometers, we'll use some kind of radio. And anything getting really far from a fiber node is going to be using a satellite solution.
Right. So, Chris, who is actually doing all this? It's not as if you can just mobilize some incredible international crack squad to go out and do this. So how does it happen on the ground?
Well, so we've mobilized this international crack squad of people who are doing this. So Giga is a team of about 30 people. We've, over the last few years, 3 years, connected 6,000 schools. So that's about 3 million young people. And Ben and Liquid have connected another 5,000 schools. That's another 2 million young kids. So something is happening, and it's only because we've been able to mobilize incredible talent from around the world to do this work. But we can't do it ourselves. So what we do is really follow a three-part process. The first is by mapping, as we talked about, making a picture clear of where need is. That gives us demand aggregation. It gives us a sense at a national level of where these spots are that companies can come in and work. The second is by financing. So we help to arrange financing for governments that can come from loans, from various big development banks. It can come from internal money, from tax revenue, and we help stack that up. This project, by the way, Gareth, will cost around $400 billion to complete. So it's fairly large money that we're talking about. And the last thing we do is we help with procurement. So that means helping governments do the contracting, do the bidding, do the analysis of bids so that they can make sure that the technology that they're buying actually fits their needs for the types of schools that they're looking at. And all of that connects back to the map and feeds into the real-time information that we're collecting so that governments can actually see that their public money is being spent and see it happen in real time. So that's really it. I mean, it sounds very simple to describe, but simple things to talk about are sometimes very difficult to do.
No, sure. But can I assume then there is some kind of scale? And it doesn't sound as if you're just going to one single supplier to get all the Wi-Fi routers or whatever. Mind you, that would be a heck of a contract if you were. But the point being, this will include buying a lot of kit and a lot of services at scale over quite a short amount of time between now and 2030. So are we getting some economies of scale there?
Yeah, we feel the clock ticking. We've connected about 6,000 schools, now 3 million kids. In the next 18 months, we're on track to do another 20,000 schools. So we've gone from 6 in the last year to 20 this next year. That's another 10 million kids. And we plan to kind of 10x it in the next 18 months after that. The way that we do that is by working through our government partners. UNICEF and ITU work directly with the national governments. People like Minister Salima in every country that we're in. And they're the ones doing national scale procurements. So Brazil this year is about to procure connectivity for about 21,000 schools in the country. And we're supporting with that type of procurement. And that's how we get to scale. It's for sure not us doing it by ourselves, but it's helping where countries are seeing the need to do this at a national scale for every school in the country. Because otherwise they know that a huge swath of their population will be left behind.
All right. Now, I feel as if at this point we need a bit of some of that healthy Peter Guest journalistic skepticism. You're hearing some incredible figures here, Peter. You're hearing some massive ambition and a very laudable project that I'm sure comes from the right place in these people's hearts. But what do you see as the main issues as you've gathered them so far?
What's that word, massive again? I mean, I know you bring me on to bring the mood down, but I guess a question, a worry I'd have is that, there are so many existing digital divides that we see around the world, where there's gaps in access, gaps in the skills people need to access the future via technology. And those get wider with each generation. The gap between someone who in 2023 has grown up with broadband and access to the internet and all that comes with that, and someone who hasn't is huge, right? And I look at this and I think this is wonderful. This is the thing that could close those divides, give young people access to those tools early. But I also see the huge numbers involved and the potential for, first of all, the imbalance in those numbers to add to that divide in places that can get it and places that can't get it. And the fragility that comes with relying on internet access in places where infrastructure can leave something to be desired. It can get turned off, it can get disrupted. And the idea that this all hangs by that thread slightly frightens me.
All right. Is there anything you can say to reassure Peter? Salima, let's come to you. The situation in Sierra Leone. Do you see a danger here that this could potentially widen divisions, maybe across some of those traditional lines between cities and between rural areas, and obviously between rich and poor, even between, children who can get access to school, maybe other children who don't so easily have access to education. So what about the potential for divisions here?
Actually, I don't. I think if anything, it is closing that divide. And I say that specifically to say, especially coming from developing countries wherein maybe internet penetration is great in the cities, but not as great in the region. And one thing I would say in terms of what GIGA does, the initiative, is first, I think it's forcing countries to really take it on board as a national priority, with all competing interests going on and all government challenges. Once we sign up to the GIGA initiative, it really forces the conversation about connectivity in schools and makes it front and center issue for the government. And maybe whilst we would not have started thinking about that with all of the other problems, challenges that are going on. It really forces us to make that as a government priority because we have signed up to the initiative. So we have to make sure that we're meeting our commitment in that sense. But then specifically about closing the digital divide and why this is so great. And I'm so happy, Gareth, you mentioned about even kids that are not in schools and why this initiative is such a massive thing for us as well. Because case in point, for example, in Sierra Leone, we got a support with supported by GIGA. We got some financial support from the Islamic Development Bank to connect, I believe, 1,000 schools. And in terms of even selecting those schools, one thing we made sure to do was kind of employ like a randomization process. It wasn't just, me sitting at my office and deciding, yep, this school, this school, this school. We really took into consideration certain aspects that we would like to think. I think specifically focusing on rural areas, actually, we really took this as an opportunity to close this divide in the rural areas, knowing that maybe in Freetown, there's more opportunities for access, Freetown being the city. And also what GIGA does is, it's not just for school connectivity, you know. Once GIGA connects a school, which is in a community, which previously maybe had little or no connection, now you're providing access to the whole community who can get access to that connectivity. So, for example, kids who don't go to that school doesn't mean that that connectivity is just for the kids who go to school. The community gets access to that.
Of course. So that's a very important point about community, and I want to widen out on that. But just while I'm talking to you, Salima, I suppose we must be very careful of thinking beyond this as simply a technology project. And I hope and assume that you're speaking to your colleagues in government, the Minister of Education, to think, okay, so the schools get this technology. This is going to change their whole curriculum, their approach to teaching and to learning. So to what extent do you see that the technical side here, getting the infrastructure, in some ways being the easy bit? Now it's how it feeds into the children's education.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things we've done in order to be able to counter that is just not a technological project, but it's a finance project and it's an absolutely education project. So we have this steering committee where the Ministry of Education sits and all other relevant players. And the conversation with the education ministry is to say, we, as the ICT ministry, we provide the infrastructure and the technology. On the other hand, they have to look at the curriculum and see how they make that to see how that fits in. They also have to also look at devices, because in order to use the connectivity, you need devices. So this project is a component of a wider plan in terms of how we transform the way we provide education to young people.
And transforming learning and education. Right. So, Ben, the technology, it goes wrong. You can't just put all this stuff into the schools and walk away and assume it's all going to work, can you?
No, you cannot. And I think that's a big piece of the role of the service provider is actually, keeping it always on, right? So one thing we've experienced, teachers initially when we started connecting schools, if it broke down, that they weren't even reporting that it had gone down, and then maybe there's an expectation. I think they have a lot of projects that are put there and not maintained, we have been sort of educating them that as a service provider we do give service agreement, right? So you call us and we'll fix it. We found it very, just to get the teachers into a WhatsApp group, they found that much more accessible than calling up our call center or sending an email, which is normally people do. But by having them in the WhatsApp group, they're very much more there and responsive. We can get back to them straight away. And then they can see that the activity is going on. I also want to, pick on this point about access, which, the devices is a big piece of, having teachers get access to the broadband and the kids get access to the broadband. And I grew up in the era of the ZX Spectrum and the BBC Micro, having a computer when I was very young. And I think it's quite important that, as well as the connectivity, kids in school get access to this. So we are sort of partnering with device companies, a British company like Raspberry Pi as well, bringing that into schools But bringing in other partnerships as a service provider, we want to make sure that, that the schools use it, right? So we fulfill our obligation to UNICEF or the government to provide the connectivity, but we really want to work closely with the schools to make sure no student is left behind.
All right. Now, I'm very aware of time here, and I know you guys need to go off to something. So, you know, the word community came up there, and I know that's one big part of this project. And for instance, having a school that has good internet connection within a village, for instance, can become a hub and a catalyst for local businesses and other community outcomes. So not that I'm skipping over that, but just, Chris, while we have you, I want to make the most of you and just ask you this very important point about online safety, because millions of children are going to end up with internet access they didn't have before. What's going on in this project to think about and to safeguard children's internet safety and online safety?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest issues that we think about in terms of risks. You know, the internet is really a terrible place. If the internet was a physical building, I would never let my kid into it. And the issues of child sexual exploitation material, of bullying, I mean, these are really serious, serious issues. That we know that when you're bringing people online who haven't been online before, you need to offer a lot of safeguards. One of the things we do is work with partnerships like the End Violence Partnership, which has an initiative called Safe Online, to make sure that there is both government policy for safe internet connectivity, but also so that the contracts that we advise governments on, remember I said we do three things and one of them is contracting, that the contracts that we advise governments on have child safety material, sort of child safety mechanisms built into them, so that ISPs can be accountable, so that ISPs know what these dangers are, and so we reduce risks there. Now, the internet is a dangerous place everywhere in the world, and we know that, but we're trying really hard to make sure that when we bring new communities on, that we at least get ahead of some of those. But it's a really tough issue, Gareth, and it's not one that's being fixed in the well-connected world or in the disconnected world as fast as it should be.
Lovely. Thank you. So final few words from you, Peter Guest. And by the way, dear listener and everybody, we will talk much more about this project. You know, it's got years to run and we'll keep an eye on this. So this is not everything we're going to say or can say on this. But Peter Guest, just for now, finish us off here then. What are your kind of closing thoughts?
I guess as a closing thought, I mean, opening up this conversation alone is just so important. And I think, I guess that's something I think about is that we're talking about, you know, Colombia, Brazil, Sierra Leone, but this connectivity gap is something that's also happening in financially wealthier societies, right? It's happening right here. So within miles of this lovely studio in central London, we saw it with COVID when schools closed and the difference between getting education and not was whether you had data and devices. And that was quite stark. And I guess I'd say as, you know, the child of a teacher, I can't really fault the idea that this conversation's happening at, well, let's call it massive scale.
Right. Lesson learned. Okay. Peter, thank you very much indeed. So that's Peter Guest, our regular presenter's friend and journalist with me here on Somewhere on Earth. A big thanks to our guest today as well, Chris Fabian, co-founder and co-lead at UNICEF's Giga project. It's a big one that we've just been talking about, the massive one. Also Salima Monoma Bart, who's Minister of ICT at the Government of Sierra Leone. She's based in Freetown. And of course, we've also heard from Ben Roberts, Group Chief Technology and Innovation Officer at Liquid Intelligent Technologies. Finally, let's give you a few more names. I love finishing on the credits. There's a load of people behind this podcast, you know. We don't just throw it together in a bedroom. The sound editor is Keziah Wenham Kenyon. Audio this week has been by Callum Swingler. Thanks also to the team here at Lanson's Team Fana. And our production manager is Liz Tui. Our editor is Anya Litorovich. And of course, as we all know, the most important person in the room is you, dear listener. We want to hear from you. Email us. Hello at somewhereonearth.co. That's hello@somewhereonearth.co is our email. On WhatsApp, we are international code 44 7486 329 484. So that's 7486 329 484. And we are on Facebook and Twitter. So search for us on Somewhere on Earth podcast or SOEP should get you there. All right. We need to be out of there. Out of there, out of here. I'm Gareth Mitchell saying a big thanks for listening. We'll be back next time. Be good, take care, and bye-bye.